into the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
Here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And at this point, we do disclosures, and we tell you that the person and disclaim. Well, we got to disclose and disclaim at the same
disclaim
time.
Disclaim our disclosure.
Our disclosure disclaimer. I think it's more like disclose the disclaimer.
But are we disclosing that we're disclaiming, or are we disclaiming that we're disclosing?
No, I'm not disclaiming that I'm disclosing. I'm disclosing that I'm disclaiming. There's a difference there, I think, if you think about it.
People really take this stuff seriously.
Lawyers do.
Yeah.
Regulators do.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what would life be without regulators? Are we the moderators?
The moderators. Yeah, it's the Lincoln moderator. County War all over again. Billy the Kid rises again.
Make you famous. The Personal Wealth Coach is not only the name of this riveting, meaning very painful and very hot and burning.
Metal being used to hold pieces together. Yes.
Radio program. It's also the name of an SEC-registered investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas, neither approved nor disapproved by the SEC, but that's who regulates us.
Yes.
Of the same name. It's the name of the same name. That makes perfectly
good
sense.
Yeah, the name of the radio program is the name of the firm as well.
And the two guys on this radio program are also the two principal advisors in the firm.
But we're not giving advice
here. That's not a coincidence, but this is not advice. This is educational information because we don't give investment advice on the radio. We better not.
Yeah.
And investment advice is given based on individual goals and desires and
what do
situations.
We do? What we do we do?
What do we do? Well, on this show, we do educational information, which we get from sources we believe to be reliable, and actually the proper term is deem.
Yes, we deem it.
We deem to be reliable.
Not how often do you, listeners, deem things? You should deem more often.
Well,
just deem. It's fun.
If they get in court, they have to deem.
And did you deem to appear?
Anyway.
Deem is an interesting word.
It is. It's a good word. I like it.
It means believe, but it also means committed enough to do it.
Intent, yeah.
Yeah.
It means that we're camping. The
Camping is intense. You're right.
It is. Well, sometimes. Unless you're in an RV.
Then
NRV.
It's really kind of NRV. That's not a good word, though.
No, NRV. It's not a good word?
Yeah. We have to have another word for that. Intense. It's just a better punchline, I think.
Yeah, it could be. Anyway, let's see. This radio program, we don't pay for this radio program, despite the fact that several times we've been accused of it. We don't pay for the radio program.
We also don't get paid to do the radio program.
Right. But we do advertise for the radio program on KTEM.
Yes. Which is not exactly a profitable proposition, but it's something. Let's answer that question that's unasked.
Why do we do this radio program? I don't know about half the time. Why do I get up early on a Saturday morning and do research?
I know why.
When I could be sleeping in.
I'm going to give some history. It's not very distant.
He's going to tell.
No singing around here. All right. Going back to 1991. So it's not ancient history. For some people,
hey, that is
it's
a kind of serious ancient history.
Yeah.
That is almost 30 years ago.
We had the first Gulf War take place, and it didn't take place here. Just if you were curious and you're not a student of history, it wasn't here that it took place, but it took people from here to do it. So Fort Hood sent a lot of soldiers. The population of Central Texas dropped drastically because they were off fighting a war, which is what they've been training to do out there every night. When you hear the boom, 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 and that's what they're training to do. They went out and did it. A lot of businesses shut down in Central Texas during that time period, and you were asked to do a radio program, or not a radio program, a television program at first, mm-hmm. out at Central Texas College on the public television station to talk about business and good practices in business. And you invited business owners out there. And the prep at the studio make up microphone, all of that took as long, and then taking it all off at the end, took as long as the actual program. So at some point you said, I don't want to do this television thing anymore, and you got a call from KTEM when it was its own entity. It was not part of a larger organization. It had its own studio, and it was a big studio. And
I'd
they
say
said
that KPLE and KTEM were both owned, I think, at that point.
Not at that point.
Okay.
Not at that point. Earlier on, KTEM and KPLE were both owned by the same group. And just if you take the K off of those call signs, you get Temple. T-E-M and P-L-E.
That spells Temple.
Temple. It's amazing.
Cool.
So they were based in Temple. So you got an offer to come and do a one-hour radio program. This was in 1997, after you'd been doing the television program for a while. It was just getting too much. They said, come over here. It'll be easier. Just do 1 hour instead of the hour plus an hour of prep and an hour of downtime. And so you did. For, 8 or 9 months, you did the radio program just yourself for 1 hour, and then they asked you to do another hour. And again, none of this is paid or paid for. In fact, at the beginning, they were talking about the advertising that they were buying for our program being some of the most profitable in the station and thanking us, and we're like, that's not what we're doing it for. Well, in 1998, you were asked to do 2 hours, and you said, why am I doing 2 hours alone? Jake, will you come and help me? And so I did. I started doing the radio program with you in 1998. The why of it is because we saw a bunch of businesses close that didn't need to close. And just getting the word out on good business decision making was important. Since then, we're talking a lot more about larger economic issues as well, and that's why we do the radio program, because I'll say it from my perspective, because I don't know what's in your brain. I can guess what's in your brain. It's probably grayish pink stuff, but I'm not sure. I've never seen it. Don't want to be promissory. From my perspective, I believe Adam Smith. Who's Adam Smith? That's the father of capitalism. He wrote The Wealth of Nations, Scotsman from the mid-1700s. And one of the things he said is that improving society is better for everybody. It's a good business practice to improve the community that you're in. So that's why we're doing it. It's a good business practice for us to have people around us that are doing well. If you guys are taking our education and using it appropriately, improving your life, it improves the entire area. I like that. That's why we do it. So, did I answer the unasked question appropriately?
It sounds like a deep existential question.
It does. Why are we here?
The telephone number in here, by the way, if you want to call and join us, is 254-773-1400. Presuming that today is the 16th of November, where you are, that really got a quick response.
They were waiting.
We do have a caller on 254-773-1400. So, caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, guys, enjoy the show. In your newsletter, you mentioned that a large percentage of the tariffs are going to go to the farmers. Without getting into the political arguments, how do they determine who gets what, how much, and all that good stuff? I'll hang up and listen to it.
All right.
Let me answer that. First off, the point in the letter, and I think this is important, is we've taken in about $7 billion in tariffs.
In September.
Well, I thought it was overall. I didn't know that was just September.
I sent you the email on that.
But the point is, we are paying out a bit more in farm subsidies that weren't there before to offset the tariffs, which, by the way, are not completely offsetting the tariffs. We have a record number of farms going bankrupt, and this is not the time in the economic cycle normally when farms go bankrupt, but in the Midwest, we have a record number of farms declaring bankruptcy, and it's rising with each quarter. But we're actually paying more out to the farmers, just the farmers, than we're taking in from tariff money, which is tied in the newsletter to an important little factoid. If we go back, we'll start last month, which is the first month of the fiscal year. But if you look back 12 months for the federal deficit for the month ending in for the year ending in October, we have crossed the $1 trillion mark. We now have in the middle of an economic boom with employment running at full tilt. As the Federal Reserve member said this last week, we are certainly playing around the edges of full employment, which is why the number of new job applicants and the number of new jobs formed is starting to trail off pretty severely because we just don't have any more people to work. But normally at the top of a boom like this, as we did in 1999 and 2000, we were running a surplus historically. And when we're running that surplus, we use it to pay down the debt. Instead, we're running a $1 trillion deficit. Now, that's an experiment. The Democrats call it modern monetary theory.
The Republicans really don't have a name for it.
They just do it.
They just do it. Yeah.
It is basically, there's no limit to how much we can borrow and spend. It isn't going to hurt us. We don't agree with that, by the way. And that's one of the reasons also that, for instance, on Friday, the Federal Reserve had to kick in $63.4 billion into the system, had to basically buy up $63.4 billion worth of Treasury securities from the system and flush cash into the system because we're running low on cash in the money center banks. And you think, well, that's no big thing to me. Yes, it is, because every time you use a credit card, every time you do a short-term transaction before it's funded fully, somewhere there's got to be excess cash in the bank reserves to cover that transaction where you do the difference in time, for example, between the time you charge something on the credit card and the time you pay the debt off. What covers that? Where does that come from? Well, the banks have to have cash to do that. That's a short-term loan that they're making to you. And if you pay off your credit card every month, they get the fees on that, which generally run around 1.5%. But they don't get any interest on it, and they have to have money to cover that short-term, all of those short-term purchases. And if the Treasury is borrowing massively at the same time, and it is, in the short end of the market, then we run short on cash. So the end result, oddly enough, is that the Federal Reserve is having to buy up short-term Treasuries to cover to put money back into the system. The Treasury is probably the biggest culprit at this point, though there's some other things going on with non-bank banks sucking money out of the system. It's a little complicated, but it's what we're seeing at this moment in time is some stress fractures starting to show up in the economic structure. That's not the only place. So there was the answer to that. The tariff money coming in is a drop in the bucket compared with the rest of the money.
How is it decided who it goes to? That's what the question
is. That is a really good question. I was unable to find anything published on that. Basically,
this is one of the issues.
Secretary of Agriculture determines who it goes to.
There is a complicated series of events that are supposed to happen when money is given out to specific aid programs. There have been... Let me kind of rewind a bit. When the Trump administration came in, one of the promises that they gave, one of the things that I was in and still am a great deal of support around, is removing extra bureaucracy and draining the swamp, in essence, corruption and so on. One of the methods that they used to advance that concept was to put a hold on most of the money going out of the administration, out of the executive branch, to lots of different programs. Some of it was very, very public and very, very apparent. Some of it was not so much. Secretary, oh my goodness, my brain just went blank. Who's the Secretary of Education, the lady's name? I can look that up.
She's the Amway person.
Yes, or multi-level market person. My goodness, Betsy DeVos. I don't know why I lost that name. She, her methodology was basically put a hold on all outflowing money given through different projects that haven't been reviewed by the administration. That can be really damaging. One of the programs that they put on hold was the forgiveness of student loans to public and not-for-profit workers who'd made all of their payments on time during a 10-year period. There was a law passed that said their student loans would be forgiven. So if you're a teacher and you've been paying on your student loans for 10 years, you get to that point, the student forgiveness is supposed to kick in. The problem is that it didn't. The Secretary of Education had put a hold on that until the whole process was reviewed, and they hadn't looked ahead to say that the 10-year point was coming up for this huge program. Everything was on hold. So she's personally been sued a couple of times over this and over forgiveness to student aid that has been ordered by judges and so on. This isn't necessarily as negative to the administration as it sounds. They clearly made a statement that they wanted to make sure they understood what money was being spent and if it was appropriate. When it comes to aid to farmers, because they've put holds on so many of the existing methodologies to giving the aid, we don't know how it's being divvied up yet. We know what's been tweeted, but we don't know the practice, and a lot of the farmers haven't received aid yet, so we'll see.
I found out how it's allocated.
Okay.
If you're a farmer,
uh-huh,
and you have certified locally as having your ag exemption, that means you really are a farmer.
Right.
And you believe you were hurt by mm-hmm. the trade war.
Uh-huh.
You write up how you were hurt, you send it in, and the government sends you money.
Okay. And except this is the point, is that the government's reviewing all those applications.
They are
reviewing. The money flow is very slow.
We're talking about a rather substantial amount of money going out. Congress raised the ceiling on the money by $6.1 billion a year last year. So they're up to $14.45 billion, and $16 billion is the total that's supposed to go out this year. Congressional Budget Office says $17.7 billion is going out this year. I've read $60 billion because it's going to other places too. But I was just reading an article in Successful Farming that said basically, there are services that are advertising in here that will help you fill out your form correctly so that you will be sure and get. It's kind of like going for a federal grant.
Right. Only because of the way these applications are written, they have to be reviewed by a person. And there's a lot of applications coming in, and that's the slow. Is that we built this thing up, but it was kind of last second, and we're not applying the kind of money-saving budget, like build a program to accept this stuff and automate it a little bit more.
Well, and basically, if you're in one of the commodities, if you're growing one of the commodities,
corn, wheat, soybeans,
pigs, whatever the Chinese have put tariffs on, you're pretty much assured you're going to get some money.
And that money's flowing fairly quickly. All right. We have another caller on 773-1400. You are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
I was going to answer the question about the money going out to the farmers.
Okay.
Okay. So the first year, which was the farm crop in 18, they paid by commodities. So corn got $1 a bushel, which wasn't a lot. But soybeans got, I don't remember, but it was a lot higher number. No one around here plays soybeans. So cotton and soybeans got more, and then corn got, like I said, $1 a bushel, which wasn't hardly anything. Well, then this year, for 19, the government changed the way they do it. They looked at the total loss by commodity because of the trade war, and they took that whole amount of money by the number of base acres that the farmers had planted, which is certified by your farm services agency. And they took that total amount by the acreage, and then they broke it down by county. So like Bell County had so many acres of cotton, so many acres of corn, so many acres of wheat, whatever it is. And then that amount of money per commodity per acre was paid out to each farmer by county. So, and they averaged it over all the commodities. So, like Williamson County got paid about $30 an acre for your every acre that you certified with Farm Services. But Bell County might have got 25. I don't know what it was. But it was by county, in other words.
All right. Are you a farmer?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, by the way. How can you tell us from a personal kind of perspective how that has impacted you?
Oh, yeah. It was much needed because of the way the commodity prices haven't rebounded because of the trade war.
Right.
Yeah.
Has it allowed you to maintain your operations, or is it? Go ahead.
From the farmer's perspective, it's much needed because, you want to be on a level playing field with these other countries. For instance, China, we just won a WTO court case against China because about 3 years ago, they spent $100 billion on their farmers. And that's more than in our whole ag bill over a 6-year period of
right,
time.
Right.
But what does that mean when you win a World Trade Organization suit against China? We don't get any money out of that. We don't get anything. All it is a mark on their record that they cheated.
Yeah, and it allows us to put additional tariffs on them without the World Trade Organization saying that we are competing in an unfair environment. Now, there is some danger here because every country does those subsidies in different ways. So if you were, this moves off beyond farming. Farming, the Chinese were very blatantly doing it. Our farm aid is also a subsidy. It's just a much smaller one. And we have been ruled against on our farm aid in the past. So this is one of those areas where the World Trade Organization it's an interesting place. You can go there. You can get a decision made. It doesn't have any bearing on the outcome. Like you said, no money flows from China to the United States because they subsidized their farming. And vice versa, because in the last year, we've also had several rulings against us in the World Trade Organization and against multiple different places. We've also had lots of rulings for us at the World Trade Organization. It's really hard to point out and say what's a real fair way of doing business. When should the government subsidize? So Airbus and France and Germany just got a big ding on them from the World Trade Organization, and that Airbus has been subsidized greatly by the European countries. And that has a really negative effect on Boeing. But if you look at a great deal of our other areas where we are subsidizing, our munitions are subsidized on sales external. There's a lot of things that we subsidize as well, so we have to approach this carefully. Anytime we talk about they did something bad, this kind of comes right out of like the program before us, the divorce counseling concept. Got to look at yourself first and then at them. And if it's still worth fighting about, then do it. And that's the thing, is that China, this was so egregious, the amount that they spent on their farming. And the reason is because they don't produce enough food. So the Chinese government said, we're not producing enough food. Basically, they did what we did in the 70s. And in the 70s, we subsidized our food to a level that was beyond anything's ever seen since we've been keeping good records on it.
Caller, are you still on the line?
Yes.
Okay, I'm curious. Have you got any insight? I'm reading these stories about record number of farm bankruptcies across the Midwest. Now, that didn't extend down into Texas, which it looked like the soybean growing band is where the farms were going bankrupt. Have you got any insight into that?
Yeah, I agree with that. The soybean guys were more the tip of the spear than the other commodities, corn, cotton, wheat. So, yeah, the soybean guys took it the hardest.
Now I'm gonna flip this a little bit. Thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate that. Oh yeah, go ahead.
The caller wanted to know, or somebody mentioned, how did the money get paid out?
Right.
So like the 18 money already came in, but the 19 money, you turned in your paperwork and you got 50% of the money already. We already got that.
That should have been the end of August, right?
Yes. It came in September.
Okay. So, they were aiming at August.
The other 50% is broke out in two 25% payments. And if the trade war was ended, the money would never get sent out. But Sonny Perdue, I believe last week, just approved the next 25%, which should be paid by the end of December.
Okay.
And then the next 25% will go into next year sometime in February. If the trade war is not over then the other 25% will get paid out. And just to point out for people who don't really know, the amount of money we're talking about is about the same amount of money, I understand, that we send to, like, Syria, okay? So
yeah,
the farmers aren't getting rich.
$16 billion.
But it is, substantial, like you pointed out before, we really need it to keep our farms going and to keep feeding the world.
Right.
That sort of thing.
Well,
so thank you.
Thank you very much for the call.
Appreciate your firsthand knowledge of that, and thank you for listening and calling in.
All right, I've got...
That was good.
Yeah, I want to flip this over to what's happening in China right now. And this is very interesting, because we get to see the effects here, but...
I understand the weather's cooling off in China.
It is. At this time of year, it often cools off in China.
Just checking.
And here, too, which is just a... I've also recognized that the days get shorter, at least in the northern hemisphere. It's very interesting. Okay. There's a website that I go to quite often. It's called China Law Blog. And it's a law firm started it, but it's been a lot of different people write on it. Mostly one person with a lot of knowledge. They help American businesses in China. So they're the spear point when it comes to intellectual property violations and so on. And they're seeing something that they haven't seen since the mid-90s in Russia and Venezuela when Hugo Chavez took over, or Cuba. What they're seeing is that the Chinese businesses, usually manufacturers, are making decisions that are very, very short-term beneficial to the Chinese company, but long-term really, really detrimental to their partnership with the American company. So as an example, if an American company came over and partnered, and this is how they do it, they partner with a Chinese company to make a manufacturing facility in Beijing. The manufacturing facility gets created. The Americans are providing the blueprints and the design, and the Chinese are providing, hopefully, good quality, safe manufacturing of these items. And over the years, the big manufacturers have really pressured the Chinese into making sure that they're not killing their employees or putting lead in the paint or things like that. Okay. Since the trade war, a lot of the Chinese companies are giving discounts to the American companies that they are creating things for. These discounts are coming from direct subsidies, just like we're giving to the farmers here. The Chinese government is giving direct subsidies to these corporations, as well as their currency has dropped against the dollar and the euro during the same time period. So in essence, there's around a 10% discount that's been offered to American companies by these Chinese companies. So a lot of the American companies that haven't had this offer are asking for the discount. They're saying, I hear that there are discounts going around, I'd like a discount. Well, that's very much like asking a farmer here for a discount on the already cheapened crops if they're not getting a subsidy. So when people are asking for these discounts and they don't understand who's getting subsidies and who's not, they are terrifying the Chinese partner into deciding that their business is not going to last. So they're doing things like putting Chinese patents on American designs and therefore not allowing, without an intense investigation with the Chinese government's not interested in doing at the moment. They're not allowing any of their co-Chinese companies, anybody else out there in China that wanted to take your job, can't do it because there's a Chinese patent that is inappropriately applied for that doesn't allow anybody else in China to make the item, even though it was invented by an American. So they have gone from they, like us, don't make a comment on whether the trade war is good or not. They talk about the impacts. They talk about the specifics and how do you plan as a business owner to succeed when this is going on. So if you're a farmer, it's really hard here. If you're a manufacturer in China, it's really hard there. When people ask them for discounts, quite often they're getting their property seized. They're getting a lot of bad things are happening in these partnerships. So what we're seeing, and we've talked about this in the past several months, the supply chain is being permanently rerouted around China for American stuff. There are some exceptions to that. Tesla, Apple, there's some really, really big companies that have enough clout and enough public persona that the Chinese are still treating them really well. But a lot of the smaller companies that are saying, hey, we sent you a design, you sent us back the first test manufacturing, it looked great, and then you shipped a huge amount of stuff to us and all of it is subpar. We can't sell this stuff. That has become a huge chunk of the Chinese business right now. So when we're saying that the supply chain is moving, China is having permanent damage done to its manufacturing capability. People are being laid off, and that is a secret, by the way. The Chinese do not like to talk about this. Remember, they're a communist government. This is why they're dumping in subsidies in here. They do not want layoffs. They want everybody to have a job. And so in that respect, China is having some really severe pressure on the manufacturing front. This trade deal is as important to them as it is to us. Maybe long-term more important, but they're making their decisions much shorter term right now. It's not great business practice, but they're doing it. And about wrapped up with that subject. Do you have anything before we hit commercials?
I think it's a good time to hit commercials.
Let's do it. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. The phone number in here is 254-773-1400, and we'll be back.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And if today is November 16th, 2019, you're certainly welcome to give us a call at 254-773-1400. We need to cover the markets.
Yeah, we haven't talked at all about it, and it's been an eventful week.
We normally follow the S&P 500 stock index because we think it's a better indicator than the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is only 30 stocks chosen by the editors of the Wall Street Journal. At least it used to be. I don't know if it still is. Because now it belongs to a different company. Anyway, the Dow Jones Industrial Average broke the 28,000 level on Friday for a new record. So you can remember that we hit 28,000 and say that's cool, which is, you know, it's an interesting number. But the there's a lot of noise in the market that should have affected the market this week. By the way, the market tends to go up when it looks like the trade war is cooling down, and it tends to go down when it looks like the trade war is heating up. And we've heard a lot of noise in both directions. We've had a lot. We've had record earnings from Walmart, and they've now had five consecutive years of profit growth each quarter, which is something of an amazing phenomenon. So there's a lot of things in there that historically should have affected the market. Most of it was negative. But instead, the market the stock market is doing this steady move upward. The market rose 0.89%. The S&P 500 rose 0.89% this week, which is not too impressive until you realize there's 52 weeks in the year, and that means that would be like a 40% or better gain for the year if it just kept doing that all year. But it's also important to recognize that the S&P 500, which has broken three all-time records this week alone, is up a whopping, 4.3% per year for the last 2 years. It's only up a couple of percent from where it was in, 3% from the end of July, and it's only up 4.3% a year, in other words, about 8% from where it was in February of 2018. And we're all the way through 2019, almost to February 2020. So the market is breaking records. There's no question about it. But it's actually trading in a very narrow range and going very slightly higher. If you look at inflation in its total aspect, the market is rising about twice as fast as inflation, which is not very fast. So don't look at your, if you've got an investment portfolio, don't look at your portfolio and expect to see huge rises in your portfolio. And you're wondering, with the market breaking records all the time, why don't I have a 20% return in my portfolio? Well, maybe you do this year because the market was down so far a year ago. We had a 20% drop at the end of last year. And that makes the year to date number look unrealistically high, which is why we don't report on the newsletter anymore. Bond market went the other way. It fell about 11 basis points. That's a 5.6% of the total yield fall to 1.833%. Now, we no longer have an inverted yield curve, but we have an amazingly flat yield curve out through 5 years. I mean flat. All the way out to 5 years, it's about the same rate. And then it jumps upward a little bit at 10 years and goes on up.
And I think the only reason why that's happening as flat instead of inverted is because of the money that's being pumped in by the Federal Reserve.
And this is a very historically unusual, not, we've seen it happen before, and I think it's ironic when it happened. This is, I may show that I'm developing a prejudice here or something. But historically, when the stock market goes up, the bond market goes down.
Not always, but a lot of times.
Historically, most of the time in a healthy market. Now, the bond market goes down when interest rates are rising. But we've got interest rates that have been falling. And as a matter of fact, a year ago, the 10-year treasury that's at 1.833 was at 3.2 something a year ago. In other words, the bond market has fallen tremendously in the last year, and the bond market has risen as yields have fallen.
Right. The yields have fallen. They've both gone up at the same time. The stock market and the bond market are both up.
So if you owned a portfolio of bonds, you saw a pretty good gain in the last year. Just treasury bonds and some corporate bonds. Meanwhile, the stock market's gone up. So when the bond market goes up and the stock market, both of them are going up at the same time. This is an unusual circumstance. As a matter of fact, the last time I clearly remember it happening was guess when?
2007.
1999.
Okay.
Just before the market rolled over and cratered into 2000, which, by the way, was another one of those that nobody expected. Is the market overvalued now? No. By historic measures, it's maybe running at the top end of its
fair market.
Of its historic fair market value. Earnings have not done particularly well this year, up 1.something%. Which makes sense with the market since July only up 3%. So we're not in a spectacularly high market, but what we're actually seeing right now, this is more my opinion, is the market has started rising very nicely without any good economic news supporting it. Now we say one of the things that came out this week was that retail sales were up 0.3% for the month, last month. Well, they were down 0.3% from the month before. And I hate to tell you this. This is one of those things about interest rates that are percentages that are fascinating. It takes more than a 3% rise to offset a 3% fall. So for a two-month period, retail sales are still down. Now, yeah, Walmart had record earnings, but that's not true elsewhere. And what we're seeing here is the earnings recession is continuing. We're not getting much in the earnings rise. We're not seeing any really solid good news other than rumors in the trade war. But the market keeps rising, and at the tail end of a bull market, it is very, very common for it to do what we call the Wile E. Coyote run. The economy starts to sag, starts to grow weaker and weaker and weaker, and you can look back with 2020 hindsight and see that 2020 next year. Ha!
2020 foresight, too. Yes. It's coming just a couple of months.
And the market continues to rise. And if this continues into 2020 with the market continuing to rise and the economic fundamentals continuing to get weaker and weaker and weaker, and they are, then this is probably an indicator that we're at the tail end of a bull market.
Let me throw some good news in there.
Okay.
This week, Nancy Pelosi announced that the House will be taking up and it looks like they will be imminently taking up and passing the bill for the USMCA, the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement, the replacement for NAFTA.
Good.
That's a little piece of,
if you realize that
we're in the middle of impeachment, we're in the middle of all these other negatives back and forth, and this looks like it's going to go
for it. You scared me for a minute.
Why is that?
Let me give you some good news. Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Good news right now? Nancy, wait a minute. So that's really the weirdness. And Nancy Pelosi's agreed to do this, that it's been on the back burner, way on the back burner. No indication that it would move forward at all this year. And she announced in the middle of impeachments going on, hey, we're going to give the president a victory.
Give you some idea back to the not so good news. Why we think a recession is probably going to come in 2020, although we've been saying that since, what, about 2016?
Yeah.
I think it's when he first said it, 2020
yeah.
will be
well
the next
before
recession.
Trump was elected. We were talking about this prior to knowing who would be president.
It's a natural cycle. Now, it can be exacerbated by economic, by fiscal decisions, but it's a natural cycle. At the beginning of this year, the annualized GDP rate was 3.2%.
Yep.
And in the second quarter, it dropped to 2.1.
And then 1.9.
And then 1.9. And Moody's is now saying that the GDP, based on the data we have so far for the fourth quarter, we're halfway through the fourth quarter. If the data doesn't change significantly, if we don't see trend changes in the data, we'll see a 0.6% growth in GDP for the fourth quarter. Now, you can follow that trend very nicely, 3.2, 2.1, 1.9, 0.6. If that trend continues, basically if nothing changes in the way things are going in the economy, if there's not some fundamental change in what's going on, it's really hard to see how we avoid a recession next year.
Yeah.
Now, can something change? Sure. The president could pull all the tariffs and say, we have phase one, and as a gesture of goodwill to the Chinese, we're going to drop all the tariffs, which, by the way, is what the Chinese are asking for.
That would be nice. That would push the recession off maybe a year. But we're still due one. We're still at full capacity, and this is what it really comes back to. There's a level at which you can't pump in more steroids and get a good result. You know, if you're muscle bound completely and you can't lift because your muscles are too big, and that's really where we are. That's the point. We have grown our employment and our capabilities drastically. That's the real impediment to further growth. If you want to add another facility to do what your first facility already does, where do you get the people to go in there? You know, 10 years ago, you could say, I'm going to start a facility, and you'd have people in line out the door waiting to be hired. Now you've got to go try to steal those employees from other people. And steal may not be the right word. Negotiate them away with a better price. So that's the point.
Hire them away.
Hire them away. That's harder, a lot harder to get growth. We're seeing the trade war having an oddity in the truck and rail numbers. So you mentioned this in the data that's in the newsletter about the railways having less on them.
There's the car count, loaded cars going from point to point on railroads so far this year is down at 8.6%.
The American Trucking Association is saying the same thing about trucking. Now, we had a huge growth run up at the first half of the year. Then we have this flapping up and down of big tonnage, low tonnage, big tonnage, low tonnage, and then low tonnage, low tonnage, low tonnage. All that big and then low was preparation for tariffs. When people are ordering stuff before the price gets too high, they required a lot of truck drivers. Then the following month, truck drivers were laid off because the tariffs hit and they didn't have things to take because they'd already taken the stuff for the inventories. It's not on time. It's build up the inventory. And then the next month, they're hiring again. And then the month after that, they're laying off again. And then the next month, they're hiring again and then laying off again. And now we've had multiple months in a row where they're laying off because the big tariffs have hit.
And what we're seeing, by the way, is gradually over the last couple of years, the truckloads and carloads of stuff being transferred around have been more and more oriented on consumer.
Right. Amazon.
And, well, not just Amazon.
Well, that's an example. Amazon
is an example.
Right. Instead of a big flatbed full of steel, we're talking about a big truck full of goods that somebody's clicked on the screen and ordered for their house.
Previously, it was being brought in big trucks to stores to be sold, and now it's going directly
to the consumer.
The point is that as we see the truck and rail car count start to fall, about 2 or 3 weeks later, we get this notification. We see that the growth in consumer spending, which was, by the way, in early 2018, was growing at 5.4% a year, consumer spending.
Big growth, yeah.
It's now down to 1.6.
Which is higher than it was. Well, spending at gas stations was up 1.1.
So what was the total spending up?
Let me see here.
I wrote that.
Seasonally adjusted 0.3% growth in October. Annualized, maybe that's what you're talking about, I think.
So, yeah.
But that's a rebound from September, which was quite low.
We saw a loss of 0.3 in September. We saw a growth of 0.3 in a percent. In October, but for the last half of the year, what we're seeing is consumer spending has slowed to an annualized rate of 1.6% from a 5.4% rate 2 years ago.
And the Federal Reserve had a report on industrial production, which fell 0.8% in October. That's the third decline in a 4 month. So what we're seeing here is exactly that flagging up and down. Get it for the tariff. Oh, tariff hit. Now we are just going back and slowing way, way down. These numbers are trade war numbers. We would get them much less magnified over a normal recession pre. And there's parts of the economy that aren't so so oriented on external to the United States trade that are still following the same path that they started in 2016. Only they got a boost because we got a trade, we got a tax cut. So that tax cut may have extended the recession. May have said we're going to wait
extended the expansion.
Right. So push the recession back a little bit farther. We still are due a recession.
And we're at that point in the economy. This is the fair warning. You know, we sound very pessimistic. We are.
Well, I don't think it's pessimistic say it's going to rain tomorrow.
It's not pessimistic.
If it's going to rain tomorrow.
And it's not pessimistic to say winter's going to come and it's going to get cold and all the plants are going to look dead. People say we're not the optimist who says we've reached a permanent plateau of prosperity.
We're not going to say it will be sunny forevermore, 74 degrees with no rain.
I read a number of commentators say that the economy is going to improve next year. We're going to hire more people next year. We're going to see all kinds of wonderful things happen next year. I don't know where they're coming from. I don't see any indication that that's going to happen. But
those are mostly, and this is important, mostly politically oriented economists. When we look at economists that actually are touching money or in academia, they're saying what we're saying.
And so the issue is, and this is the thing we want to warn you about, and it's a very simple issue. The economy is on a knife's edge. And it is balanced.
That sounds scary.
Well, it is. We're hanging on the edge. It would, if we got a number of shocks in the past few years that didn't throw us into a recession. Any unexpected shock at this point probably would. And we have a caller on 773-1400. You've got less than a minute before the end of the hour. Go ahead.
Good. This will be quick. 401k, I want to retire in about 10 years. I've got like 90% of it in Vanguard Prime Cap. And I know that's risky. What should a guy do knowing that the recession's coming soon?
All right. We may need to answer that next hour. It's a good question. Thank you for it. We're coming up on the end of the hour. If you would like to contact us off the air, the phone number to call locally is 254-947-1111 or 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. Contact us there. You can send us an email at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Until next hour, this has been The Personal.